From the beautiful Finger Lakes region of upstate New York, this is the Dental Lighthouse Podcast. We take questions from anyone in the dental profession and discuss what it takes to win not only in dentistry, but in life. Business, leadership, relationships, parenting, health and wellness, money management, nothing is off limits on the Dental Lighthouse Podcast. I'm Jason Tenori, your host, and have over 20 years of experience to pull from. Learn from my mistakes and let me help you collapse time so you can become the best version of yourself. Next on the Dental Lighthouse Podcast, we have Ashley from North Carolina. Ashley, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing awesome. Better than we deserve. How can I help you?
Yes. So I have a startup practice that opened about 2.5 years ago, and I've had to part ways with multiple team members because they have not been the right fit for our office. So how do I go about the interviewing better on the front end, and what things should I look for to ensure they're going to be a better cultural fit for our team?
Good question. Yeah. And a super difficult one to answer, right? If we had this figured out, then we'd all be gazillionaires because we've dealt with a lot of similar issues in our organization. So let's talk through some best practices, realizing that there's no silver bullet, right? Mm-hmm. First and foremost, I think you need to be crystal clear on your core values and not just have them on a sheet of paper, but have them well-defined. So for example, it's easy to say, well, one of our core values is humility, but what does that really mean in the context of your office and your situation? And I think that's super important because we want to share those core values early in the interviewing process in an attempt to almost scare people away, in an attempt to say, look, we live and breathe these values. And if you're not going to be part of that, if you don't think you can manage that, then you're not going to last here very long because this is super important to us. So I think that's a good first step. A second step that I would ask you to consider is 100% clarity with what you're expecting them to do, right? So in your situation, front desk team member can mean a gazillion different things, right? So now if your startup is small and you expect your front desk, you have one front desk team member and you expect them to do 100 different tasks, there's nothing wrong with that. Just have clarity on what exactly you're expecting them to do. If you're hiring for a treatment coordinator, have a very detailed job description, daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly checklist that I would start to go over during the interviewing process and make sure that they have clarity on what their responsibilities are going to be. The third thing I would ask you to consider is some type of personality profiling test. There's tons out there, Colby, DISC, Working Genius. And then along those same lines, there's skills assessment tests. I believe we use Criteria Corp. Yeah, we use Criteria Corp, which again isn't a silver bullet, but it's a really good way to gauge someone's ability, their skill set. And those tests will kind of spit out what they think that this person should be doing. So if you're hiring someone to do billing, accounting, really granular numbers work, you want someone that has super high attention to detail, doesn't get distracted to do that job. If you're looking for a treatment coordinator, you want someone with more softer skills, very empathetic, a good listener, and these types of tests can reveal those things. So those are all things that I would encourage you to do on the front end during the interviewing process. A couple other minor things, obviously checking references, but nobody shares references that are going to be derogatory, for lack of a better term, right? And then I really like group interviews or working interviews. And they don't necessarily have to be group interviews, like 3 or 4 people at the same time, but maybe almost like speed dating where you spend 15 or 20 minutes with the applicant and then another person on your team that you trust spends 10 or 15 minutes and you go through two or three of those, and then maybe a 2-hour working interview, at the very least observation. So that's what we do in our organization, and it works out well on the front end. Does that answer your question as far as like the interviewing process?
That is perfect, because the people that I've had to part ways with, these are all things that if I clearly define like what that role was, for instance, I said treatment coordinator, but then maybe I wasn't very clear about, you're also going to need to help with the phones and help with, you know, checking patients in and whatnot. So I think that the I mismanaged the expectation on that level. So I think that's great. Now, my question is, as far as the personality test or talked about Colby, you said, okay, for this position, you want someone like more detail oriented and orientated. This other position, you want this. Do you have like, and I know different people can fit into different roles, but do you have like kind of a general guideline of like what is typically going to be more successful, like as far as each position? You know, it's like assistants, typically you want to see X, Y, and Z for that role. Do you have kind of like a general list of what you could be looking for?
Yeah, 100%. And we can send that to you. And again, nothing's perfect, but using something like DISC, for example, if you're an S, you're going to be more so patient facing. You're going to be more so a good listener, empathetic, really understanding, versus if you're a D or a C, it's going to be much more black and white, much more numbers based. And not to suggest that a great treatment coordinator or a greeter on the phone can't have some D and C in them, but it would just be on my radar. It would just be like, you know, maybe you're not the best person for that particular seat. And then again, in your situation, if you're small, maybe a core value is flexibility, right? Where, you know, we insist on flexibility. We insist that you wear multiple hats. There's not one person that just does one job. We're all about teamwork and flexibility. So it might be something to consider while you're small. And as you grow and as you ask one person to do one specific seat, then it's not as important. On the flip side of that, when you do hire them, you got to have a really dialed in onboarding process, right? It's got to be 90 days. And in theory, and I know this is a lot of work, and we can share with you some documentation about this, but in theory, you really want to have every day of the 90 days dialed in, right? So the first day is maybe an observation day. And then the second day is a core value review, and starting to learn the software. And then the third day is role playing on the phone and whatever it is, right? Depending on the position that you're looking for. But if you have clarity on what they are to accomplish over those 90 days, and then you have clarity on who's supposed to train them, then the success long term is going to be much, much better. I would also encourage you, you know, the phrase that is very popular is hire slow and fire fast. Like once you start to see early on that you made a mistake, I'm all for trying to remedy it through coaching and through more clarity of expectations. But one of the things that I failed miserably on early in my career was hanging on to people too long, thinking that I could change them. And the reality is it's hard to change people, especially long-term change. So don't beat yourself up, but also don't hang on to someone way longer than you should.
Yeah, that makes sense. I love that. There is one thing that you had mentioned, but it might come back to my mind on, So being that I'm a startup, I'm also wearing a lot of hats. How do I guess I just have to schedule time with that person. I'm just trying to think of like, when am I going to have the time? Cause I'm seeing patients and I'm also running the practice. Of course, like for instance, my front desk girl, she's only been there for about a year. She knows a little bit, but I don't really have like a trainer person when you have such a small team. So I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to carve out time in my schedule, but I guess it's just, I just have to carve that time out to train them, even though I'm not the best at front desk. But I guess, how do I figure out how do I give them that quality onboarding process when I'm also everywhere at one time?
super tough to do. A couple of things to think about, and you know, we can unpack this. I'll unpack this on a separate episode, but every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else, right? So if you're going to agree and say yes to training, then you can't be chairside. Then you can't be with your daughter. Then you can't be at home. And I'm not saying that that's wrong, but just realize it, right? Like, you can't all of a sudden create time. So if you're going to say yes to training someone, then something else has to go by the wayside. It is what it is, right? But just realize that. Secondly, you may not be the best person to train. So empower someone on your team that maybe is better at that. And it doesn't have to be one trainer, right? So you might have someone that's magic on the phones, and in your onboarding documents, you're going to say, okay, Sally, who's magic on the phone, is going to teach you this part of your onboarding process. You are going to learn how to be just amazing on the phone. Now, Susie over here is unbelievable at presenting treatment. You're going to spend X amount of hours over the next month with Susie on how we present treatment. Now, Mary in the back is amazing with handoffs and how we want handoffs to be done. She's the one that's going to teach you that. So when I say a trainer, I don't mean one trainer. I mean these 100 things that this new person needs to learn. You need to put a name next to each one so that new person understands that, okay, it's time to learn handoffs. Looks like I'm supposed to spend time with Mary, and I'm going to go ahead and get that taken care of.
I love that. That's perfect. Very helpful. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I hope I answered your question. And I really
you answered everything. You just need to be able to come into my office and just help us every day. But this is great.
All right. So appreciate the call. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great.
Next on the Dental Lighthouse podcast, we have Brian from the great state of Texas. Brian, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Welcome aboard. Welcome aboard. How can I help you today?
So we have a situation at the office, at our dental office that needed some help with. We recently promoted a person into a lead dental assisting position. And this person was new to assisting, and they're also new to the office. We had other team members that have been with us for longer than this person, but when this person joined and started learning things, they were very fast and they fit the role better than other team members. And they're also good at communicating. So she's been in the position for over a month, month and a half. And some concerns came up recently that I was kind of wanting to get some help with. And the concern came up in the meeting that this person might not be pulling their weight and maybe avoiding the basic assisting tasks. And this was by maybe two team members that felt like that. And I can't figure out if it's just the resentment part of being bypassed into that position. The fact that, you know, she got into that lead position before them, or if it's actually this person avoiding this task. Now I can see kind of this kind of going both ways, where the new lead might have so much on her mind that she's getting people to do certain tasks without clearly saying that she has other things to do, or if it's actually this person avoiding this task. So just trying to figure out how to handle the situation and how to get them to come together and understand each other's roles and responsibilities.
Right. Love it. Love it. Let me ask a clarifying question. She had no dental experience and you hired her to be the dental assisting lead, or you hired her to be a dental assistant and then quickly realized that she would be leadership material?
She was hired to be in a dental assisting position, and then we realized that she would be a good person to be in that position, in the lead position.
Awesome. All right. So let's unpack this a little bit. Couple things. It's a tough situation to be in, and I don't I don't envy you for having to deal with it, but hopefully I can give you some nuggets of some things to think about that might help. First off, I think we need to understand the concept of hats, right? Or seats. I like the term hats, right? So this particular person is basically wearing two hats. They're wearing clinical chairside assistant hat, and they're wearing lead dental assistant hat. And they're two very, very different jobs. Now you should have job descriptions associated with both. Okay. So she has clarity on when she's wearing this hat, she's doing this. When she's wearing that hat, she's doing that. I would also encourage you to have her scheduled accordingly. So the problem that we run into, and I've been there, and it's easier now that I'm bigger than maybe when I was your size, is when we ask a lead to also be a full-time chairside assistant, it's really hard because when are they supposed to lead? So just to use, put some numbers to it, if you're open 35 hours a week and your expectation is for her to be chairside clinically with you that whole time, then when is she supposed to manage her leadership duties? So in situations like yours, what we have found that is successful is we dedicate administrative or leadership time to these clinical leads. Now, again, I don't know if you're in a position to do that, but if you are, it would be a good first step. Now, it could be as little as 1 hour per week. We have some leads that are up to 3 days from an administrative perspective, and then just a day or two chair side. So everyone's ratio is going to be a little bit different based on your size and based on your need. But if you were to divide up those responsibilities clearly and then divide up the time, what I think will happen is when she's chair side, and everyone knows she's chair side from 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock, she needs to be the best chair side assistant she can be. She needs to lead by example and just be amazing, right? When she's in the leadership position, that 1 hour a week, that 3 hours a week, whatever it is, I would encourage you to have her break that time up into two categories. One, we'll call it deep work, where she literally locks herself in a room or goes to a coffee shop and brainstorms how to make the assistant team better. Now, that could be through managing the assistant schedule. It could be through revamping a clinical system that is broken, like how to set up the room for Crown and Bridge. It could be going to an operatory that's not being used and videoing how to break down a room. So the rest of the team has that resource. It's just work that she basically needs to do by herself. The other part of that time should be spent, I use the phrase, shaking hands and kissing babies, right? So it's basically, I want this lead to act like a mayor and walk up and down the hallways and just serve in any capacity they can. So if they see that a room needs to be broken down and the doctor's behind, then they jump right in. If they see an assistant that has a little bit of downtime, then they jump into that operatory and they have a minute meeting. How's it going? How are you doing? Do you feel supported? What needs to change? Like those types of conversations. So when she's present, she can jump in and remove obstacles because she knows, like, there's no specific job description when you're just walking the halls. You remove obstacles, you serve, you try to make your team better. But when she's wearing the hat of deep work, she's away from all the chaos, she's away from all the noise, and she's truly trying to develop systems and protocols to make the assistants better. When the rest of the assistant team sees her walking the halls, they expect her to jump in and help. When they don't see her, they're not even thinking about it. So does that help with your conundrum?
It helps. So what I want to ask as a follow-up to that is, like, I have like 3.5 or 4 assistants. So some days I can see that being very beneficial, where some days we can just have her work on it and then work on the lead part. And then some days, you know, she has to be kind of like more involved. So like you said, you know, in a team like your size. So the question is, you know, like when to hire extra help to try to avoid, like, you know, when to hire extra help to let her do her part without losing control of the overhead, like in terms of like having extra staff then on the team.
Yeah. Super good question. Right. So the first thing I would do is make sure you have clear expectations for each seat that she's in. Right. And I'm assuming you have clear expectations for chairside dental assistant. That's pretty obvious. Right. But what you may not have is clear expectations on the dental assisting lead. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. And I can send you some stuff to kind of get your creative juices going if you don't. The next question that you have to ask yourself is, does she have enough time on a weekly basis to manage that dental assisting lead job responsibility? And like I said earlier, when we were smaller, it was an hour a week, right? So that's all she needed. And as we grew and as we got more complex and as we brought on more people, she needed to dedicate more time to wearing the dental assistant lead hat and not the chairside assistant hat. So it turned into a half day, and then it turned into a full day. So there's no right or wrong answer. You just have to gauge where you're at. So at this point, based on your size, if you do have the capacity to give her 1 to 3 hours per week where she could spend half of that time in a deep work block and half of that time walking the hallways, then that's a great way to kick off, say, the next 30, 60, 90 days. And then as her responsibilities become more complex and more time consuming, then you'll have to figure out if you can create capacity for her to spend more time on a weekly basis wearing that dental assistant lead hat.
Yeah, that makes sense. it gives me some clarity. I'll probably ask you for the materials to help me kind of get started on that.
Yeah, we have your email, so I'll forward it to you. So hopefully that answered your question. And then obviously, if you have any follow-up questions, just don't hesitate to shoot us an email or you can shoot me a text.
Sounds good.
Thanks, all right, brother. Great talking to you.
All right, thank you.
All right. Next on the Dental Lighthouse podcast, we're going to dip into the emails. We get a number of emails every week asking questions about systems and processes and leadership and health and wellness and all types of cool stuff. So if you do have a question, you can email us jason@thedentallighthouse.com. That's jason@thedentallighthouse.com. But this email comes from Mark in Florida. Jason, I believe my associates are trying to be more leaders in the office and hold people accountable since I have taken a clinical day away and I have told them to address issues as they arise. For example, if an employee is late, they will call them out. Staff have come up to me and told me they're becoming rude and dirtbags. How best to train your associates and address incidents, especially when I am not there? All right. A lot to unpack here. First off, kudos to you for trying to develop another level of leadership. It's hard enough for us to be owners of the practice and become great leaders ourselves. And it gets really complicated when we're trying to teach another layer of people to become leaders, to become the best versions of themselves. So this is not easy, but let's try to talk through it here a little bit. So first off, there's multiple ways to lead. I have my preferences and we'll unpack that. But in a nutshell, you lead via power or you lead via influence. And when you lead via power, you lead via intimidation, via do it or else, do it or you're fired, do it or you're suspended, do it or I'm going to withhold your bonus. You can also lead with power by some of your actions, being passive aggressive, like eye rolling and rude and calling people out in a group, embarrassing them. Those are all ways to lead via power. And unfortunately, a majority of people do lead via power and it doesn't work. At least it doesn't work long term. It leads to turnover. It leads to employee disengagement. It leads to mediocrity in terms of job performance. And most importantly, it leads to a team member that just is not inspired. So there's people out there that lead via power. I don't want you to be one of them. So the other option is to lead via influence or lead via love. And again, whenever I mention the word love, everyone can kind of takes a step back and they're like, oh, love, I'm not leading via love. But again, just hear me out, right? So let's unpack this particular situation. I'm imagining that you're not in the building. I'm imagining that you're at morning meeting and your associate who's trying to do the best they can has a team member come in late for morning huddle. And as they roll in 10 minutes late, they say something like, Mary, nice of you to join us. Or would you hit snooze twice today, Mary? Or just something that's passive aggressive, something that's embarrassing, something that is leading via a power tactic. So how would I handle this situation? Well, I would not let it deter. I would teach the associate to not let it deter me at all when Mary rolls in 10 minutes late and finish your morning meeting, do everything that you're supposed to do. And if you have time right after morning meeting, you go over to Mary. Now, have some self-awareness, look at your watch, and you're going to need to have a 5 to 10 minute conversation. If that 5 to 10 minute conversation is going to make you late with patience, then you don't have it right then and there. But you go to Mary and you say to Mary, hey, Mary, I want to connect with you before you go to lunch or before the end of the day. But it absolutely has to be that day. We call those minute meetings. Mary, I want to have a minute meeting with you before you head to lunch. So you touch base with her before you head to lunch and you approach this conversation strictly from a position of curiosity and empathy. So you say to Mary, hey, Mary, you know, you're 10 minutes late for morning meeting. Help me understand what's going on. Let's unpack that a little bit. Why were you late? And you truly want to understand why she was late. It could have been a situation where she had some childcare issues at home. Maybe she had a sick child. It could have been a situation where her 17-year-old son took the car the night before and left her with no gas. So she got in her car and she had to stop at the gas station. That only happens to me every week. It could be a situation where there was a bad car accident on the way to work and it delayed her. Or it could have been a situation where she hit snooze multiple times. Or it could have been a situation where she was up late the night before binge watching Netflix. Like, just be curious. Don't assume the worst in people. Assume the best. So get clarity on that. Then you have to be really clear with her on the expectations. Mary, I need you to understand that the expectation is that we start morning meeting at 6:45. And I need you here at 6:45. Once that expectation is crystal clear, once you've confirmed with her that she understands that morning meeting starts at 6:45 and she needs to be there by 6:45, I personally like to go over the consequences of Mary not being there at 6:45. And I don't mean consequences of power-based leadership, like if you're not here at 6:45, you're fired. If you're not here at 6:45, you're suspended. If you're not here at 6:45, turn around and go home. I mean consequences of, Mary, when you don't come at 6:45, I need you to understand the consequences associated with that behavior. First off, let's say she's a hygienist. First off, you don't have an ample opportunity to prep your charts for the day. So patients are going to suffer. You don't know who needs x-rays, who has outstanding treatment. Your room's not set up. That's one of the consequences. Another consequence could be, Mary, when you come in late, it sends a message to the rest of the team that morning meeting is not important. And I'm not sure if you believe that to be true or not, but I value morning meeting, the information that we're able to share with the team. It sets us off really positive way for the day. It lets us know Who's unconfirmed. It lets us know where we have same day treatment opportunities. It lets us know if we're going to hit goal or if we're on track to hit goal for the week or for the month or what have you. So when you're not here, those consequences negatively affect the patients. They negatively affect the organization. They negatively affect your teammates. Does this make sense to you? Can you become more apt at being on time? Yes. Yes, Mark, I'll definitely start to be on time, right? So sometimes you just need to have one conversation and they just need to have clarity on what the expectation is. The expectation is I show up at 6:45 and then they need to understand the consequences associated with not being on time. And you need to make sure that you manage through curiosity and empathy why they were late. And if it's something that you can help them with, great. If it's something that they just need to figure out on their side of the table, then great. So what if the behavior continues, right? So what do we do then? Well, if you see it happen a second or third time, you have to, again, address it right away. A minute meeting, either right after morning meeting or right before lunch, right by the end of the day. Again, from a position of curiosity and empathy, help me understand what's going on here. After that, you start to worry that this person may not be a good core value fit. And what we do in our organization at that point is we call it opening up the kimono. And we basically say, hey, Mary, we've had this conversation two or three times, and it doesn't seem like what I'm saying is landing with you. So I'm going to bring in the rest of the team and have them help me keep you accountable for being on time. And the first reaction often in situations like that is, oh my gosh, no, like that's so embarrassing. Like I would never, no, we can't do that. And then I would say, everyone already knows you're late. Like you're walking in 10 minutes late. How is it embarrassing for me to say to the team, Mary needs help getting here on time? Can we all rally around her and help her come up with ways to be accountable to showing up on time? When you do that, two things happen. First, she realizes that you're really serious. She's going to bring in other people to keep you accountable, to keep her accountable. I'm sorry. But more importantly, from my perspective and our history, is it tells the rest of the team that you are aware of the issue and you are trying your best to handle it. What I have done in the past, and this was a huge mistake, is I've had these minute meetings, these one-on-one meetings. I put people on performance improvement plans, but no one else knew that I was doing it. And when the team member continued to not improve, the rest of the team started to develop a mindset of, is anyone going to talk to Mary? Mary gets away with everything. Why is Mary allowed to do this, but we're not? They didn't see the other side of the curtain. They didn't see that I was actively trying to work on this with Mary and trying to grow her. All they saw was Mary coming in late. So when you open up the kimono and after two or three times, you bring the rest of the team in, they start to have an aha moment where they're like, oh, they are trying to remedy this. They are trying to fix this. And it gives you a little bit of equity that you're trying to do the right thing. So hopefully that helps answer your question. This is just another layer of servant leadership that it's hard to get dialed in as the owner of the business. And it's even harder to get dialed in as you're trying to teach these skills to a growing leader. Like everything, leadership is a skill. It's a learned or acquired ability. And just like playing the piano, just like losing weight, once you practice it and you put in the work, you get better at it. So encourage your associate, make sure that they realize that by being passive aggressive, by being rude, by being a dirtbag, as you say, by leading via power, you're not going to get anywhere. But if they can adopt these skills of leading via influence, if they can have these conversations based in curiosity, based in love, based in empathy, and truly try to grow this person, make sure that they understand the expectation, make sure they understand the consequences of not meeting that expectation, And then ultimately making sure the rest of the team knows that you're working on this with that particular team member, good things will ultimately happen. You'll either coach this person up or you'll coach this person out. Either way, it's a win. So hopefully that helps.
Thank you. That wraps up another episode of the Dental Lighthouse podcast. You have a choice today. Choose to be a lighthouse. Lighthouses are powerful and steadfast. They are beacons of light for others to reference when life gets turbulent. Go out into the world today and become a lighthouse for someone. Give more than you get. True joy comes from serving others. Start today. I'm Jason Tenorio, your host. Thank you for listening to the Dental Lighthouse podcast. For more information, podcast show notes, or links to anything that we have discussed today, please check out our website, thedentallighthouse.com. We would love to hear from you. If you would like to get on the show, please email us at podcast@thedentallighthouse.com.